You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to another Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Caw and delighted to be joined by Record Sports' Gordon Parks and Graham Young. Guys, how are you? It's my favourite time of the day, seeing your cheery faces.
You can't even see my face.
You're away in St Gallen.
Yeah, I'm beautiful, but very expensive.
Graham, how you doing?
Yeah, very well, Dan. Really well, mate. Transfer season can't... It's good fun, isn't it? It's all fun. The transfers seem to be happening again, so no complaints.
I think that's the best place to start because, as we record this on Thursday afternoon, news seems to be breaking from Russia that Celtic are closing in, or the reports from Russia say they've agreed a deal to sign Sayad Haksabanovic, and I apologise if I'm butchering the pronunciation. But playing for Rubin Kazan, born in Sweden, 23-year-old Montenegro international. He played in Sweden last year, Graham, for Norrköping and got 46 goals and assists in 70 games. Mm-hmm. So he certainly sounds like a talented player.
Yeah, I think the write-up on him as well is he's packed with flicks and tricks, and that's his MO, but he's played multiple positions. He plays in the left, which is obviously where Jota or Maeda can start for Celtic, but he's also played in the right, and I think Ange Postecoglou gave a clue at the weekend when he was talking about maybe if one or two more come in, they need to be versatile players. And he definitely fits the bill in terms of that. That's what he's about. He's Celtic, obviously a player leading the line, but there's multiple players. But the number 10, the two wide men, need to be able to play in different roles. And that's apparent to watching Postecoglou as Celtic manager. He kind of a bit of grounding at West Ham. Maybe some Celtic fans would maybe... get a slight fright. Obviously, that's Albion Ajeti was there, but I think completely different type of players. This is an emerging player who's playing his best stuff, where when Ajeti came to Celtic, he was off the back of a really tough season at West Ham, so similar path in that way, but I think different type of players. And as you can see, one of his things he likes doing, you can see straight away, is the old nutmeg. Likes taking players, isolating them one-on-one. Abada, Jota, that's hallmarks of their game, and I think Celtic going into Champions League, they're looking for another attacking player. It's been something they've been looking at for most of the summer. And he definitely fits the bill. And by the sounds of it, if a deal's done, it'll be less than the 5.4 million that Kazan paid for him last year, which sounds good business. And obviously with the uncertainty going on in Russia, Celtic have obviously potentially be able to get a bit of a bargain here on a player who appears like the best football's ahead of him and probably suits perfectly the way Postecoglou wants to play.
And Gordon, looking at Postecoglou's strike rate, his success rate with transfers, you just need to trust him, don't you?
It's so refreshing to hear that. It's clear that the success rate's been great. It's in comparison to some barren years. I mean, it's been well documented that Celtic over the last, I don't know, 6-7 years, the recruitment hasn't been good enough, but it's been addressed. They've made some changes. They've always to get people there that know what they're doing. I mean, there's been some catastrophic transfer windows, but that's a thing of the past now at Celtic. This boy looks as if he's got pedigree. He's a good age. Celtic's demands now in the Champions League. Hopefully, it will be a long, it'll be months and months and months of it. They'll need that kind of backup. They need players that can go and do it again on the Saturday and the Sunday. It'll freshen things up. Clearly, he has his finger on the pulse with regards to scouring across Europe and making sure that the identity of the players that he's going for are young, they've got a transfer sell-on value. They are hungry to prove themselves, and Celtic Park's a place to do that.
Mm-hmm. I guess we'll watch this space then. Obviously, we've still got another 12, 13 days left in the transfer window. If he does arrive, Graham, do you expect that to be the last bit of business Celtic do?
I think Postecoglou himself kind of kept it open to a couple options at the weekend, and but it would be the same premise, I'd imagine, of a player that can play multiple positions, maybe another midfielder that can play different roles, or being a defender with versatility as well. But I think that might round out the attacking options. So you would have Maeda, who's obviously been starting on the left in the league games, we know Jota can play there. Abad on the right, a potential new arrival coming in there as well. So there's options on the wings. Maybe frees up a Mikey Johnson to seek that loan move that he's probably a protracted loan move that seems like an option. Maybe a case of James Forrest long term, what comes next for him. But it just gives Celtic, as Parsley said there, that there's a profile, a type of player Celtic target, good age and the ability to get better as well. And I think the core skill this the new arrival has is he likes to take players on, likes to isolate them. And that's what Celtic are really good at, and I think he'll fit that more perfectly. But as you say, back to your original point about more incomings, I think Celtic are just watching the market. Something might come late. That's how it happened last year. We brought in Carter Vickers, loan to buy, that obviously turned into permanent deals. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be that type of player, that maybe big club player on the outskirts of the first team there. I think the more long-term targets have already been brought in, but they'll keep themselves open for the rest of the window.
I think if you're Mikey Johnson and you pick up a deal record this morning and you see that story, you try and accelerate your exit, because clearly they're looking for more options and he doesn't fit the bill. I think the recruitment, if it's finished or not, Celtic could probably do with somebody to enforce things in the middle of the park, a bit of authority, a bit of height, a bit of strength. I think they'll be a bit light. James McCarthy, I thought, would come in and do that. It looks as if Ange doesn't believe that he is the man to do that. So if there is a vacancy, that's maybe the kind of area that I would look at.
Yeah. And as you mentioned there, Graham, I think I'm right in saying it was deadline day last year when Jota and Carter Vickers came in. So I mean, yeah, we all know that anything could happen in these last couple of weeks, so we'll see. Okay, since we last had the Celtic podcast, obviously Celtic a thumping win at Kilmarnock. Gordon, actually, from the outside, you know, that all the kind of hallmarks of a kind of banana skin for me, because the plastic pitch, I thought Derek McInnes had set up really defensively, really kind of hard to beat his teams, but it was an incredible show by Celtic.
You know, it's funny, Stephen Robinson said at Pataudry a few weeks ago when his St Mirren team lost to an Aberdeen team that played well, that Aberdeen was operating in a different league. I mean, you see Celtic going there to traditionally Kilmarnock's a difficult place to go. The pitch is atrocious. But when they get rolled over as easily, it's kind of depressing to watch it. You know, Celtic fans delighted to see everything that they're good at, that attacking verve, the confidence, the goals. But from a Scottish football perspective, you've got to put up more of a fist than that. I mean, if you're looking at the season ahead, I don't think Celtic really have been as strong, really, for a long, long time. And I think the Kilmarnocks of this world are going to get rolled over routinely. And it's sad to see.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that Gordon's kind of said it there, Graham. I think the gap between certainly Celtic and the rest of the league is, or Celtic and Rangers, is, I can't remember it being bigger.
Yeah, and I think already you're seeing the difference to last year. Celtic, the three defeats in the first six games, and that was during probably the biggest change the club was going through in terms of personnel. And that's obviously mitigated this season. It's a much stronger core. They've been able to bring in players for the summer. And I think Parsley's right. Like, you can see the difference there at the weekend as well. And I think in praise of Celtic, what they've been able to do really well is, like, they stick to their principles perfectly in games like this. So obviously there's a natural instinct to keep it safe, the plastic pitch, the ball's not bouncing. But they're playing those telling balls constantly. Came off early, then they were just able to dominate as well from there. And Maeda, the case of Dyson Maeda, I think there's an appetite as well sometimes for Leo Abad to start games because of just what he brings, a go at Ross County off the back of that. But Maeda as well, just the running, like if Celtic match, it's like the argument with Manchester United on Saturday night, outworked and outclassed by Brentford, but the basic you would expect for your players is to match the opposition for work rate, and Maeda brings that every week. The pressing's unbelievable. It's the way he's the first man to go, chase down every player. So if you've got that kind of work rate, Celtic instantly are on an equal foot, and even in challenging conditions, like really hot day, plastic pitch, and then from there they're able to play their football, and there's a real desire to play their football. I think Greg Taylor right now, I think he's a man of the moment, and he's that inside fullback. That if you remember last year, at the start of last season, how much it was a learning curve for players coming inside. It didn't look natural. A lot of times it was going back and forth, probably up until the Motherwell game, maybe start of October. I still think most league games there was moments of panic, but now it just looks second nature to these players. So Celtic are able to swamp the midfield. The opposition don't really have answers for it in terms of players. And then Celtic, as I say, they're already pre-existing work rates, just able to take them over as well. So I think it's multiple challenges for every team facing Celtic. I think Rangers have started the season pretty well as well, but Celtic just have a defined way of playing. Every player knows what they're doing, and it's bearing through every week they take the field.
See that comment you make, Graham? There's a manic desire to go and press forward. And Maeda sets a tone. Like any striker that's prepared to go and shut down and work as hard as that, it does. It encourages everybody then to lift it. The intensity from the start is so impressive from Celtic. If you go and do that, you scramble the brains of defenders. They just don't know. They're not settling into the game. Is he going in behind? Is he dropping short? They've got that much movement. It's the key feature of Ange, I think, for me, is that, I mean, I know they've got quality players, but they've got a real desire and hunger to go and outwork teams. And if you've got that combined with the superior ability, you've got the perfect remedy, the perfect recipe to go and achieve what they want to do.
Yeah, you can see, I certainly can see why Ange kind of crowbars Maeda in to most of his starting 11s, because, as you say, he just hunts the ball down. He leaves defenders not a second on the ball. And that's, in the modern game, that's exactly what you need.
He doesn't have the same kind of class, shall we say, as others, but that quality that he has to set the tone quickly. Sometimes enough. I mean, he's a decent player, but he's not in that same kind of level technically as others. But what he brings is that, like I say, manic desire to make sure that they get possession, and he sets the tone. He's worth his weight in gold.
Mm-hmm. And up front, Graham, sticking with the strikers, Kyogo Furuhashi, obviously got Celtic underway. The first goal at Kilmarnock, it was a really good goal, brilliant movement. I think his movement has always been top class. But later in the game, Jackie Mack has come on and scored a screamer of his own. I feel like Jackie Mack deserves a wee bit more of a look-in than he's got or he's had at the start of the season.
I think we're probably, it's not a dissimilar argument to where we were in the summer about, it was maybe Mick and I talking about it. Like both of us maybe made the case of Jackie Mack in Champions League games. But when you see Kyogo, what he brings everything that he's been bringing since the moment he's come into the team, like excellent movement, that threat of the run behind. So Kyogo, by probably what he's achieved so far, deserves the nod. So it's just the position Celtic are in. I know there's this argument to maybe try to find both in the team. I don't think that would probably work, would be advantageous to Celtic at present. So Jackie Mack, it's just because there's no injuries as well. Celtic have got a strong squad. Last season it was one in, one out a lot of times, so they were able to get runs of game time. Jackie Mack is, as we is, one of the most natural one-touch finishers you'll see at that level. And I think when you look at his stats area in Holland as well, Holland's been fool's gold for strikers for so long. So this idea that Celtic were able to get the top scorer on the Eredivisie last year, almost felt, I think a lot of fans over the years, Alfonso Alves and Mattia Kesman, these guys that have fought elsewhere, there's maybe a natural kind of hesitancy. But because he's ability in the box, he's actually the perfect Ange striker because what he does. But then Kyogo's the perfect striker because the movement's so good. So I think it's a kind of a dueling kind of decision that Postecoglou's got most weeks. If I still, as good as Kyogo started the season, as good as he's been, I think the physicality that Jackie Mack has brought in the two Rangers wins in the league last season would translate well to the Champions League. And Partsy made the point about a bit more physicality in midfield. So if you combine, I know they were after Vinicius Souza, who seems like a complete defensive midfielder. I think if a player like that was found, plus what Jackie Mack brings up top, that's your best of both worlds. You would still get the high press and the desire, but I think Jackie Mack is potentially, I'm talking about against teams like maybe like a Napoli or Tottenham at Parkhead, against top teams, but there might be, if the tactics are right, a result there. I think Jackie Mack is potentially the guy who starts and Kyogo comes off the bench, but we are week to week. It probably is the best way to go the other way around. Kyogo to start, Jackie Mack as well. Jackie Mack is, by nature, you think, rough people up, but what he does is he's such a good one-touch finisher. Look, Kilmarnock were triggered. Jackie Mack is always going to score at the weekend. But it's the best type of decision Postecoglou has got to make, and I think it's one that probably won't change with still being just one game a week. I'd imagine Kyogo will start against Hearts.
Well, Gordon, if you were the Celtic boss, would you stick with Kyogo at the weekend, or would you give Jackie Max a start?
Just that embarrassment of riches that they have. You mean either or? Jackie Max is, Graham rightly says, yes, naturally a finisher. He's probably the most lethal finisher that Celtic have. But Kyogo brings everything to the party. He ties the whole thing up. He's the brains of the operation. And I think he holds the jersey. But once the Champions League games start, players will have to step up again. And you'll find that Ange will have to come up with different answers. And that's that variety and option. He's going to have to play horses for courses in specific games. There'll be injuries. It's just that kind of bedding in period now where there will be troubles ahead. There will be hurdles to climb. And if he's got all those variables, what a great position to be in.
I do kind of agree, Graham, that I would love to see them both up front together, because I think in a bygone era when, you know, 4-4-2 was more in fashion, I think they both complement each other so well. You know, Jackie Max has the strength, the finishing. Kyogo's got the movement, the pace, playing in the last defender's shoulder. But it's not going to happen, is it? I mean, maybe Kyogo out wide, but that's not where his strength is.
Do you not think, sorry to butt in, but do you not think when they go away in Europe, when a more kind of tactical game has to be played, a more patient game, that Maeda will be the man to fall out, and that will be a natural partnership to play away?
Maybe, and hopefully. Like I said, I would like to see it. I think they'd be complementing each other really, really well. I guess we'll see. We'll see how the things pan out with the Champions League draw. Another guy that I wanted to bring up is, of course, Jota. It feels weird actually seeing just Jota. He doesn't really have a first name, Graham, does he? He doesn't go by anything.
Doesn't need it. Nelson Laforme is on just now either. That's warm enough for him.
In the opening three Premiership games, he's got 2 goals and I think 4 assists so far. There's definitely been this kind of rumbling and kind of bickering on social media about who's the best player in the league at the moment. I saw James McFadden and Chris Boyd talking about it in Sky Sports. McFadden was very emphatic that it's Jota. And to be honest, I mean, it doesn't even seem close to me. Jota's far and away right now the most talented player in the league.
Who's the argument against? I mean, who else is stepping forward? Is Ryan Kent the kind of...
I think it seems to be Ryan Kent is the one. And Chris Boyd threw up Morelos, but I don't know how you could justify that.
Football's all about statistics and what you put up there. And if you put up there just the stats that Jota's delivering, there's no argument. It's Ryan Kent's stats, if you isolate them, if it is a man-for-man kind of chat we're having here, Ryan Kent's stats are not good enough. Jota's stats are off the chart. He's a better player, a better athlete, he brings so much more. He's got more impact. If you're a wide player, you have to influence games. You have to influence games continually. That consistency that separates great players from brilliant players, from average players to bad players. You have to say Jota is standing out on his own week after week. And the Kent argument doesn't hold water for me.
No. And Graham, I think he's better than last season. I thought he was brilliant last season, but he seems to have come back with a clarity. You know, he's obviously got the permanent move, and I'm really intrigued to see how he'll get on in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. He was excellent in Europa League last season. I know he was pretty good all season, but I think a Ferencváros away, Betis away as well. That was his first real chance. He was excellent that night when Celtic started fast. He's got everything, hasn't he, really? Let's be honest. It's play both wings, good first-time delivery, knows how to get into the back post, does it all well, and just something about him. I think because he was the kind of prince who was promised at Benfica, it was kind of meant to happen to him, and he's still kind of adored by Benfica diehards who kind of pegged him as the next kind of Academy Day star. And I think all that's combined, that once it kind of came off at Celtic last season, maybe clarity was a good word to use there, that this is him now, he knows what he's doing, he's plays for a manager who gets the best out of him. This is a big season for him as well. He's the type of talent. The Celtic, obviously, Celtic sold a lot of big players in recent years, but he is the type. He fits the MO of, does really well at Celtic, and big teams will come in for him because the kind of European elite, because that's what he's about. He is a top winger. But it all rests on these Champions League games. It seems a bit severe to say that, but it's about how he performs. And I think he's tailor-made. His age, his experience now, kind of thrive in the biggest stage, and Celtic get plenty of players at that third to bring a goal threat, but he's just that X factor, isn't he? He can score all types of goals, can play all types of passes, and it seems he's timed now and he's very much living up to the hype.
Graham, I spoke to his old coach in Portugal and he said that even from a young age, this is a player that wants to continue to hit levels. Now, the first level he wanted to hit was a first team level, and he wants to go beyond that. It will be hitting levels again, and he'll know within himself that he's got more levels to hit than Celtic, and Celtic fans enjoy him while you can, because if he continues in the same vein and does deliver in the Champions League level, he will move for big, big money.
I mean, obviously, I don't watch Benfica every week. I know that they won last night away at Dynamo Kiev, and they've got one foot in the Champions League. But Benfica must be kicking themselves. 6 million in this current climate seems like an absolute steal.
Yeah, I think in defence to Benfica here, I think after the Valladolid loan, it appeared that maybe Jota wasn't going to hit the levels that they'd hoped for as well. But the Celtic move last season alone just was the perfect team at the right time, and that's kind of obviously fulfilled his potential. You need to remember, he has 20 coming up for 23, so I think he's 24 next year actually. So you've got a player who's, it's not that 19, 20 year old. The kind of comeback season last year with Celtic's changed everything for him, and Celtic were able to get a cracking deal. Got to laud that as well, because as much as identifying these players to get them at the right price tag, Carter Vickers is in the same bracket as that. That these are proper players, the type of players that leave the English Championship for 18 million and 17 million is the first move. They've sold it in the position, there'll be sell-on fees for the clubs involved, but Jota's just in that kind of perfect spot right now, and he's been able to kind of bring it back, and he's just in the kind of prime of his career. I think Celtic just, it's worked flawlessly in terms of all the deals that have come off. This is the kind of perfect one. I think the Van Dijk, Celtic with a lot of good deals, as much, Parsi made a good point about recruitment. I think it's a mixed bag for Celtic in terms of these really marquee players that have gone for big money, they've worked really well, but sometimes weren't backed up. Sometimes it would be kind of poor windows followed by Moussa Dembele's, Victor Wanyama's, Virgil van Dijk. But right now there's a core of Celtic players who in the next 2-3 years will be sold for money, and if Celtic keep up this trajectory of clever signings, the way teams like Portland, Benfica do it, Ajax and PSV, and they could be in a really, really strong position for the next 3-4 year cycle, because players are of a good age. You sell them at the right time, bring in more. There's no reason why that can't continue if they get it right again. And anyway, with Benfica as well, Benfica, they've got a habit of getting it wrong in the transfer market. Bernardo Silva, I think Joao Cancelo as well. There's been a few over the years that they've misjudged and let out the building. So Jota wouldn't be the first one they've got wrong.
Yeah, but you've got to look at the player himself. You talk about the climate at a football club, the culture, the environment. Speaks volumes for the way Celtic are looking after their players and making them feel. Because you can go to, I mean, who knows what his mindset was when he was playing in Portugal? Who knows what it was like in Spain? Certainly, if your football club fits the way that you want to be, what you expect, then it's half the battle. He's clearly happy. There's so many players at Celtic that are bringing their talents to the fore, and it has to be the right environment to do that. So Celtic should get applauded for creating that. That's not an easy thing to do. There seems to be perfect harmony at Celtic just now. There's not, even the players that are kind of fringe, there's not rattles getting thrown out of the pram. It seems to be the culture at Celtic's a happy one. And players that are expressive, that get that kind of wee bit different about them, they feel comfortable to show it. Celtic fans clearly are a part of that, because they embrace players that can do that wee bit of magic, and I think Celtic should be applauded for that.
Another kind of positive headache that Ange Postecoglou has coming up this weekend, obviously Celtic at home to Hearts, and what's probably the kind of headline fixture of the weekend. Gordon, if you were the Celtic manager, would you stick with Moritz Jens after his kind of impressive showing while Starfelt's been out injured? I know Starfelt came back and scored last week. Do you think you'll reinstate him?
I don't. I think we're talking again about the environment. I think you have to allow players to settle, and I think Ange will be delighted that he has a player there that seems to be fitting in. I watched him come on against Norwich and I wasn't that impressed. So clearly he'll take time. You have to give him time to bed in, and this is the chance now, because he's got that momentum, he's got that bit of confidence. He's physically a better option than Starfelt. He looked far more switched on. I think you stick with him.
What would you do, Graham?
Probably stick with him as well. He's been an impressive player, and I know he was linked last summer. I don't think it went kind of plan at Lorient, and but you just see his stature. It's a perfect type of loan as well, because look at him, he looks exactly like a kind of top centre half. He's good on the ball. What he does quite well, I think already, and Stephen Welsh, I think it's totally underrated. I've got to be honest with you, I think he does a pretty decent job. I don't think there's maybe an argument to ever be Celtic's first pick when others are involved, but I think it's a backup. Stephen Welsh is pretty good, especially a homegrown player. But what he does really, really well, Jens already, he's quicker with that ball into Cal McGregor. Sometimes when they're coming up the pitch for the ball, I just think he's making decisions pretty quickly. He seems to be talking well to Carter Vickers. I thought they've looked pretty sharp together. Just a perfect loan. Again, this for Celtic, it works, right? So he's got a pre-existing relationship with Riley, but he was also raised in Fulham's academy. He knows British football. I know there's a difference between Scottish and English, but this is a guy who, none of this is a major culture shock to him. He's able to come in quickly. He's had a rubbish time of it, pretty much like Jota had. So again, parts of his point about the atmosphere and the way Celtic run it, just he's another who's benefiting for that. I quite like Starfelt as well. But I think Jens has got a chance here too. He's got the jersey. If he keeps playing well, there's no reason why he can't keep it for a while, because I think he's looked really, really good. But I wouldn't surprise him to go back to the old pairing at some point.
Graham, so if you isolate Celtic and you look for potential problems, if there's an Achilles heel, it is that lack of height. When there's defending set pieces and corners, there's a concern. Carter Vickers is not particularly tall. Starfelt, who I agree with, he came on and last season and was great. But that Jens option that gives you that kind of dominance, an aggressive physical player, he kind of ticks the box there that Celtic are vulnerable because of the lack of height. He brings that and they need that. It's a huge advantage for him to try and, you know, go and cement himself.
And there was actually, that's bang on parts of it. It was a dawning kind of realisation all night, the PSV Rangers game. I felt as much as PSV by tradition are a passing team, they just look big and strong. I think it's a reminder, if you come up, I know I've name-checked Tottenham already, but these type of teams, every team's bigger now. Like, it's not smaller players. So as much as Celtic have got kind of smaller full-backs and smaller wingers, they probably do. And that's when Vinicius Souza was linked as well. I thought he was an imposing player who could play in midfield Champions League nights, and Jens definitely fits that bill. Giakoumakis again, I think that's the argument. Giakoumakis at corners, and just a little bit, that's pragmatism, isn't it, at that level? It's not about changing your philosophy, because I genuinely believe this Postecoglou team is a more defined way to find goals than a Brendan Rodgers team, and that's not about who's better. At this level, I think Celtic, the way they play it, low crosses into the box, might be able to get goals in Champions League at home especially. But things like Jens starting, Giakoumakis starting, maybe a bigger defensive midfielder, that might just be the difference to keep teams at bay at set pieces as well. And obviously they'll be packed full of technical ability, but I think there is just certain things Postecoglou can do to kind of mitigate the potential damage in these nights. So that's a really good point for Parts. I think that makes a ton of sense.
I keep remembering, Brendan spoke about Celtic resting with the ball, and it told me a lot about his approach. And certainly Brendan Rodgers, the Celtic team, was brilliant, but they didn't have that same kind of the engine didn't roar as consistently within the team as Ange's team. This team is at it constantly. There's no resting with the ball. There's an objective. I mean, Brendan's team sometimes were too much, you could see them kind of changing the angle of play, retaining possession. This is a Celtic team that's got more of the direction and more a kind of intent to continuously press.
Yeah, and I definitely think, just going back to the centre-half debate, I really like Starfelt because I like the fact that he's proved a lot of people wrong. He took a lot of stick last year when he scored that. It was a bizarre own goal against Alkmaar, but he really came onto a game. He judges the ball well. His interceptions are brilliant. I forget the stat, but the percentage of interceptions, he was top, in the Premiership last season. But having said that, I don't see how you can drop Jens. Aside from looking impressive, he scored 2 in 2 games. So, I don't see how he could be dropping out the team. This weekend, obviously mentioned Celtic versus Hearts, Graham. I mean, Hearts have had an unbeaten start to the season. They look really good again. They look comfortably the third best team in the country. Normally, I would say this is, going to be a tricky fixture. The only thing that I think pushes it more in Celtic's favour, Hearts, as Partsy knows, he's over in St Gallen just now, about to watch their game tonight. They are the team that have to juggle, you know, this tough two-legged Europa League, Europa League game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's true. It's funny, Celtic on a Sunday, they've got plenty of experience of that, but it's not what they're doing. Because obviously it's Hearts that get the Europa League duties this time. I think you're right. Sometimes, but you never know with games like this. Like there's always maybe there'd be more of a pressure on Hearts if it was just a traditional non-European. We need to get a result, or we're trying to improve. And they actually did all right last year, Hearts. And there was moments in each game. They obviously won the first game of the season. The League Cup game, Celtic came out like a runaway train. In the second half, Hearts did quite well. The game at Tynecastle in January. There was plenty of examples of Hearts doing okay against Celtic last season, but this one just feels a bit different. Celtic with this week preparation each time is just a bit unfair, isn't it? Because I think Ange's whole game is based around the training and the intensity of the training, and that reflects in the game. Whoever they line up, I think it will be pretty much the same team again, because that's just the way it's been. I couldn't see many changes, and just their hot favourites. But in saying that, I think Hearts have got every chance of doing well in Europe, so maybe a short-term setback might be worth a long-term gain for Hearts. But just Celtic at home, the pitch is too big, the players are too wide on it, and there's just too many questions throughout 90 minutes that most teams can't answer. And I'd be surprised if Celtic don't. You don't want to say, I don't think it's going to be hammering, but I think it was every chance a convincing one.
I'm just thinking out loud here, but obviously it's kind of strange for Celtic to have such a placid, relaxed August. Normally it's really frantic and really high pressure, tense qualifiers. I'm right in saying that this year's winner of the Premiership, it's not guaranteed yet that they'll go into the Champions League next season. It's not guaranteed yet, is it? I know I'm putting you both in the spot, but I think Scotland's coefficient still needs to maintain where it is. Graham, you might know a bit more.
You have put me on the spot there, because I think there's variables.
The coefficient's getting dragged through the mud at the moment with Scottish teams in Europe. Motherwell, I was in Sligo, abysmal. Dundee United, atrocious. And in the last, since the start of last season, Scottish clubs have played 25 games away from home in Europe. 25, only one. That is a stat that needs to change if the coefficient is going to be improved. It needs to get better.
Sorry, Graham. Sorry, Gordon. 25 games away, how many did they win?
Four,
that's mad. And Graham, I was saying to Gordon before we started recording, someone said to me the other day that Celtic haven't won a European two-legged knockout tie since Barcelona in 2004. And I thought, that can't be right, but I think it is.
No, that's a correct stat, mate. That's bang on. And they beat Tepliči in Barcelona all 3-0-4 season. Since then, it's been, to be fair, for the first couple of years, it was okay because they were losing to maybe a Milan or a Barcelona in the last 16 Champions League. I think there's mitigating circumstances, but I think the Zenit tie, there's a chance to go through under Rodgers, and a few opportunities since, and a few disappointing campaigns mean they've not even got out of the group stage. So, and obviously with next year, highly likely the winner's got to go straight into the Champions League group stage. There's a real run here for a team that's on both Celtic and Rangers to try and seize control, obviously, and I think Celtic with the Champions League guaranteed, Rangers are obviously trying to get there. It's a big opportunity, and it's all about this season first and foremost, but there's a bigger picture here with the shift in the coefficient in recent years, so this might be the start of a new run in the Champions League, which was commonplace 15 years ago when it was a regular occurrence for Celtic and Rangers.
Absolutely. Guys, I could stay and talk to you all day, you know I could, but I think that's probably about all we've got on today's Record Celtic podcast. Gordon, Graham, it's always a pleasure.
Daniel, thank you very much. See you when you get back.
I should say, safe travels, Gordon, and I should say for everyone listening, you can follow us, obviously, on Facebook, at Record_Sport on Twitter, and at Daily Record_Sport on Instagram. And we'll be back next week. Cheers.